Moncrief on News Talk.
It is indeed time for parenting. Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. I have a son who's doing the Leaving Cert and he's doing very little study. I don't know how many times myself and my wife have spoken to him about how important it is to put the work in now to get the college course you want. He is so relaxed. He's pretty much horizontal. If I'd half the opportunities that he was given in life, I would have jumped at them, but he just doesn't appreciate the sacrifices we have made to get him there. He's doing grinds and seems to usually scrape by, but he just isn't applying himself. And as a parent, it is incredibly frustrating. I find myself losing my temper with him and then feeling guilty. Have you any advice on how to encourage a Leaving Cert student to actually knuckle down?
I feel like this is resonating with a lot of people right yes. now across the country in these final weeks. But it's such a great example, Sean, of how the Leaving Cert can consume family life, you know, and it can make parents more stressed than kids, you know, like that. It's, I always feel with the Leaving Cert, it's like the whole family's doing the Leaving Cert, not just the young person. Mm. The truth is we cannot do it for them. Much as we might go, oh, I just want to will you into doing it, we've got to think like somebody their age with their perspective, their developmental lens on. And as an adult, you might go, oh, but it's such a short few weeks, just this final push, and then you never have to do it. But they're in it and they're tired at this stage of school. They're tired coming up to this. I think as you're reading through that, I'm going, okay, well, these as parents, they've made a lot available to this kid. But the truth is he has to now avail of it or not. We can only make something available. He's the one who's going to have to avail of it. I do think that line, though, Sean, he's so relaxed, he's pretty much horizontal, is something to think about, because I'm curious that his laid back temperament may not be a bad thing in all of this. You know, coming into an exam season, I say this as somebody who would have been highly stressed coming into exams, especially at this age of Leaving Cert. I think I learned how to better manage exams as I got into third level. But I remember in secondary school feeling so stressed that half of the work I was putting in, I couldn't access because I was so anxious about the exam itself. Sometimes going into it really relaxed can serve kids well, you know, and he may be taking in more than we think. He mightn't be sitting down for hours, you know, arbitrary number of hours putting in study, but maybe he's got an approach that will suit him and stand to him. Either way, he's got to do this now. As parents, I really think you've got to pull back a bit, not take your hands off the wheel and go, right, good luck, whatever happens, happens. But gentle encouragement. He knows the exams are coming. He's hearing that in school. Every teacher is saying that to him. He's hearing it all day. He's hearing it from you at home. He is very aware the exams are coming. I think I would focus on connection. I'd focus on breaks. I'd focus on, you know, why don't we go see a movie this evening after you've studied? So you're focused on the movie. You're getting that study reference in there, but you're not, you must do 4 hours or else you can't do whatever it is. You're saying, let's go see a movie. Let's get a takeout when you're done with your study today. You know, I'll time it for 6 o'clock. So you've got between now and then. You know, how you frame this could actually be really helpful. If you approach this in a slightly more laid back way for a laid back child, I think it might land more effectively.
Yeah. We've had this question many, many times before. And I must say the line about, you know, when I was his age, I would have jumped at these is that even a fair comparison to make about, no. You know, someone who did their Leaving Cert 20 years ago or more?
No, but also, you know, at his age, you probably wouldn't have jumped at it. As an adult looking back, you can say, gosh, I would now push myself into those things. I would be saying, but that's with the benefit of our adult perspective. When you're 17 years old or 18 years old and you're in this, the life experience you're drawing from is relevant to those years. And they have been in school. This is what, and the Leaving Cert is really hyped up. And I get it in lots of ways. And I really wish it wasn't, Sean, you know, because there are many, many ways to pursue whatever he's interested in doing next. And I think if the conversations that you're having with him now are about and focused on what he wants to do next, not in a threatening, well, if you want to do that, you better do this kind of way, but really getting him to focus on his goals, that the exam is a means to get to those goals. But I think any of us look back and go, gosh, yeah, I would have studied differently for my Leaving Cert. You know, who amongst us wouldn't? But with the best will in the world, if we were back there at that age with that developmental experience, we probably wouldn't do it differently.
Is it worth asking him? Or maybe it's too late now, I don't know. But it also includes the line about, you know, getting the points he wants to go to college.
Mm.
Is that what he really wants? That's not discouraging him to do the Leaving Cert, you know what I mean? But because we tend to think in those, you know, like it's a kind of sausage factory thing. It's Leaving Cert, yeah, then college.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard for loads of kids, Sean, at that age to kind of go, ah, yeah, I just put something on the CAO, but do I want it? You know, is that something you really desire doing? A lot of, they're too young to really know that. So many of them will start something, they might change, some benefit from a year out, some benefit from a different route altogether. But I feel by reading this letter, these are parents who think this child is on track to go to a third level study institution of some kind. They've put the grinds in place, but he is doing, and it's also here, he seems to scrape by but isn't applying himself. So I suppose what comes up for me is, whose expectations is this letter about? If that child is scraping by, what I hear is he's doing okay.
Mm.
You know, okay is okay, unless your expectations are that he do exceptionally well, in which case exceptionally well generally takes exceptional hard work.
Yeah.
So I think you might have misaligned visions or goals here. Not unusual, let's be honest, between parents of an exam student and the exam student. But I do think a conversation, but not confrontational. Get it out of the house and say, look, here I am pushing you and pushing you. I have no intention of bringing the stress into our house for the next 2 months that before these exams start. What is it I can do to help you? What do you need from me? And trusting him. And just, they're his exams. Let him do them.
Mm. I split with my son's father when he was five. And we have quite a civil co-parenting arrangement. Ultimately, we both want what's best for our son and like to see him happy and succeeding. The problem is that now my son is nine. I notice that after spending a weekend at his dad's, he comes home absolutely shattered. It's obvious that there's been no bedtime, no screen time limit, and any sense of routine is gone. I understand my ex gets less time with our son, but I'm the one who's left with a very cranky child, not wanting to get up for school because they're so exhausted after a weekend of too much fun and not enough sleep. I feel like I'm turning into a naggy parent who is left picking up the pieces and don't benefit from any of the fun with my son. How can I make sure the routine is adhered to? And how can I help my son when he's in such a cranky state?
Oh, I think this is, oh, I really feel for this parent. There's something very good cop, bad cop about this creeping into the parenting. And I get it, you know, if your son has maybe less time, is how I'm reading this with his father, they're doing a lot of activities and it's maybe weekend and it's fun stuff. And then you've got the routine ritual stuff of Monday through Friday, for argument's sake, going to school, doing all of the homework and the bits like that. And I think that is something that's actually very stressful, particularly as children get older. And I'm wondering, you know, because there's nothing in here that makes me think, oh, I don't think you co-parent well or that you can't communicate. And I'm wondering if they could meet, like, could this parent writing into us, could you meet your ex or have a planned phone call if that's more comfortable to say, look, Monday mornings are becoming really difficult and I just don't, I want to avoid, you know, our son ending up splitting us into good cop, bad cop. It would help if bedtime and screen time rules are consistent across both our houses. So you don't say, I want everything that you do to be the same as what I do, because that's not fair either. And it's appointing yourself as, you know, the family CEO. I'll decide how everything goes. And, you know, but if you pick those two things, that this would really help, bedtime, screen time, if we can be consistent, then our son knows we're on the same page and that's in his best interest. And it truly is in his best interest to know that his parents can communicate about him and that they do talk about what's best for him and you have shared vision about what's best for him, because that's putting boundaries and safe limits in place. And I think with co-parenting, that's always optimal. It's something you want to do and approach it with your ex in a positive, collaborative way and avoid sounding like you're critiquing or judging their parenting, because that's a slippery slope. And, you know, you can find yourself getting some unsolicited feedback right back to yourself if that's the case. But it can also be perceived as, oh, you're telling me I'm a bad parent, which I don't think is the intention here. I think it's genuinely, we need to tighten up some boundaries on a couple of key consistent things so that he's better able to function during the week as well as the weekend. So I would approach it as two adults together, but again, very positive approach. Really, I want to work together with you on this, really collaborative mindset. So for some people, that would work best if you meet face to face. And for other exes, that would work better as a phone call. So, yeah, try whatever's going to work for you.
Yeah. Also, so I would say that there's probably many couples who are together, who aren't co-parenting at a distance, who have exactly the same issue.
Absolutely agree with you. And I think, especially as our children, like this little guy is 9 now, so he's really in the throes of that middle childhood stage. And, you know, it won't be long before you're talking about pre-adolescence and re-pushing boundaries and testing limits in early adolescence, which again, developmentally, I'd expect a 13, 14, 15-year-old to be doing. But that's really when they need us as parents, whether you're parenting together or apart, you're as co-parents, they really need to know we're on the same page, we talk to each other, we share information, and we're coming at this as a united front.
I have a shy and sensitive 7-year-old girl who stims when she's excited or happy. Joanna, could you explain what stims means?
Yeah, so stimming is a particular behaviour that children do to, well, not just children, Sean, actually, plenty of adults do this as well. But they do it to regulate emotional arousal. So, for example, if I'm getting really, really excited, I might flap my arms a bit and it helps me to kind of calm down or keep myself in a zone of arousal. It's a clinical word, though. And, you know, so it's something that's often associated with autism, but not exclusively. And I think it's important because often when people hear that word, they think autism. That's not necessarily the case.
Right. OK, so she's a 7-year-old. She stims when she's excited or happy. She sort of shakes her head and repeatedly closes and opens her fists. It usually only lasts for a few seconds. I'm not sure if she's aware she does this, as I've never drawn attention to it. I've discussed it with her teacher, who says she mixes well with her classmates, and she's never seen anyone mock her about it. So I feel there's no issue, and if it keeps her happy and regulated, that's all good. I don't want to make her self-conscious. My issue is, my 4-year-old boy today got frustrated with her not letting her have a toy he wanted, and he turned to me and said, "Mammy," sister's name, "does this in the car when we're going to school," and proceeded to do an unmistakable impression of her stimming. She argued with him that she doesn't, and I told him to stop and distracted him, but I'm not sure how he should handle this going forward, if he now knows this is something he can use to hurt her feelings when he's frustrated.
Yeah, and it sounded like she wasn't totally aware that she was doing it, or certainly didn't recognise his representation, which the parent did recognise. She's like, "Well, I don't do that. I don't look like that." Because stimming, like I was saying, is about self-regulating, but it's a word to describe self-stimulating. That's the stimming bit of it. Repetitive behaviours that will serve a purpose. And like this little girl is doing some flapping or head shaking, but there's lots of different types of stimming. So there's visual, which would be blinking or eye rolling. There's auditory, which could be snapping fingers, touching your ears, or repeating a sound. Vocal stimming could be things like coughing or throat clearing, humming, or word repetition. Some people do it's more vestibular, so it's more body oriented, like pacing, rocking, twirling, or even full body stimming might be spinning your body entirely or rocking your full body. Some people tend to stim more in an olfactory way, which is about smelling or sniffing, or tactile, like this little one. It's described, you know, open closed fist, maybe it's finger tapping, it could be arm or hand flapping. So this can look very, very different in different people. And, you know, I think as a parent, you're right, don't draw too much attention to this. Don't make a big deal. I know you've spoken to the teacher and you were specifically asking about how, you know, she mixes well with classmates. So this parent might have been wondering, oh, what does this stimming mean? Keep an eye on it. It's very common behavior in toddlers, Sean. You know, lots of toddlers do this. They flap and they move and they rock and they twirl, and there's nothing more to it. And lots of children tend to outgrow it. And some children, it stays. Some adults will do this too. I would tend to watch the levels of stimulation that this little one might need. You know, she might, you know, it might look for a pattern. Is it at times when she seems a bit overstimulated or understimulated? Is it after a long day at school? Is it anticipating going into school? Like, is there any pattern to when this behavior is most prominent? And maybe the teacher could do the same for you, because you might just want to make sure, does she need a movement break? Would she benefit from more or less stimulation, in other words, and planning that out and getting better understanding to support her to kind of sustain what I'm going to say is an optimum level of arousal for her, which might be different to other kids. But in terms of the actual question about how do you handle this with your 4-year-old, 4-year-old is being 4 there. Hey, she does this. Like, maybe your four-year-old was having a go at her, but maybe your four-year-old was just pointing out a noted difference as well. Mm. And there was no kind of malice or negative intent there. I would tend to say, she does, so what? She likes to do it. You know, it helps her to feel comfortable. It's no big deal. And just acknowledge what he said, but completely downplay it. And you're being honest with that. You know, it's something she likes to do to feel comfortable. It's no big deal. And that way you're taking out of the whole, oh, don't say that to her, you know, because that teaches the four-year-old, oh, this is effective. This gets big reaction from everybody. Next time I'm frustrated, I will say this. And that cause and effect, which is coming in at 4 years old, might kick in. I would take the power out of it. I would take the steam out of it and go, yeah, so what? Yeah. Some people do that.
Yeah. Though that, I assume that would beg then or invite a conversation with the seven-year-old who will say, I didn't know I do this. Why do I do this?
And
how, yeah.
I think that's actually much more likely. The four-year-old will go, oh, fair enough. I didn't know that, and maybe move on. But if the seven-year-old is suddenly going, do I do that? I think you do owe it to her to say, do you know, yes, sometimes I've noticed as well that you do it. I've noticed it's when your feelings are really big. Like if you have really big excitement or really big worries or really big whatever, that sometimes you flap your hands and I think it calms you down. What do you think? So just talk to her about it. But, you know, acknowledge it so that it's something she can go, oh gosh, yes, it does make me feel better. And I think in and of itself, you can manage it that way. But I also think at 7 years old, you know, what if next year or the year after a couple of kids in her class were to say, why do you flap your hands? And she's to go, I've never thought about it because I'm not aware that I do it. I'd rather she's prepared to say, oh, it's just something I do to feel comfortable. It helps me to relax. And she has an answer and she'll have had that because she's heard it from you at home.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there. If you have a question for Joanna, you can, of course, send it to afternoon@newstalk.com.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on Newstalk.